Okay, thank you. Baruch Hashem. Okay, so the call is now recorded. So anybody, if you want to say anything, you're more than welcome. Please do, but just know that the call is being recorded. So that's, you know, it's up to you. On the last few minutes, before we recorded, I tried to just explain the difference in terms of safety. This is a very important nakuda, which I think most people I speak to don't quite grasp, or they don't believe, or usually it just doesn't even occur to them. The safety issue here. Guard Your Eyes is a great website that prides itself, and rightly so, on the concept that Guard, the founder of the website, of the organization, really, the website and the organization, came up with, that since we're on a, what he calls anonymous, it's not anonymous, it's secret, kind of a website, everybody's secret. So that's not anonymous, that's secret. So since everyone's secret, they're safe, and therefore people will finally have a place where they can be honest. Whereas before, a guy was too embarrassed to tell his Rebbe that he masturbates every day in the shower, or that he just, whatever, can't sleep, fall asleep without masturbating, or that he looks at porn very frequently, or that he or she, you know, does these things and this and that. Whereas, you know, this person couldn't tell their mentor or Rebbe or whatever, a rabbi or a parent or whatever, you know, some safe person. They couldn't tell even a safe person because it's so shameful, so embarrassing. So finally now there's a website where they can tell the whole truth without any fear of retribution or shame or anything, because no one can figure out who they are. So it's wonderful. The drawback is you're not telling anybody anything because there's no one there, because you're talking to Gingerbread Man and Tshuva 613. And these people don't really exist as people, and you know it. So there's no honesty there, really. Am I still on? I'm sorry. I hope I'm still on. So there's nobody really there, because whoever you're talking to is also secret from you. So you've really accomplished very little. For example, the realness is not there. There's very little realness there. This phenomenon expresses itself very nicely. You find people on Guard Your Eyes, Ruba de Ruba de Ruba, who come. They make some kind of progress for a little while, and of course those who are only whatever. Anyway, so they make some progress for a while, because this is, even though it's secret, even though it's so, there's so much fakeness involved, faking my name, faking this, faking that, talking to other people who are fake, and the only reason that I'm telling them the truth is because they can't figure out who I really am. So there's no relationship of honesty being established here. There's technical honesty. It's sort of like honesty, realness, you know, honesty by proxy, sort of. So, you know, because of that, it's sort of like I'm saying to you, can you imagine if I said to you, I'll tell you the truth because you cannot figure out who I really am, you know? So now what's going to benefit from there? I might get good advice from you, that's true. But we're all smart people, and most of us have had enough good advice, you know, and many of us have been learning Torah for, some of us, decades. So, the Torah is the best advice. The Torah, if that's not working for us, something else is missing, and it's not brains, it's not wisdom, it's not advice. There's something else. Guard sent around a video based on a TED Talk a couple of years ago that he was very excited about. And it was a guy saying, everything you ever thought about addiction is wrong, you know? And it was not about addiction, it was about recovery from addiction. But the title was a good title, Grab Your Attention. And the guy gave a 15-minute talk about how relationships is the true relationships is the answer to addiction in all settings that we discover and research and this and that. He says it's relationships that creates the missing ingredient that addiction was providing or whatever it is, and now it makes that actually change, and people get sober or don't get into addictions. So then he went and talked about that. And so, you know, so Gard very beautifully really sent it around saying, like, you see that this is, you know, this is such a beautiful concept. I sent him back. That's precisely what's missing on Guard Your Eyes. This isn't a criticism. You know, this is obvious. The question is, where do we go from here? You know, the one thing that's missing is a relationship. In other words, I'll tell you everything about myself as long as you can't figure out who I am, you know? So what the facts are there, the relationship's not there. That's precisely what we're trying to avoid, is establishing a relationship. I don't want you to know who I am. I don't even want to know who you are. You know, but if you figured out who I was, by God, I'm going to try my best to figure out who you are, so that, like, it's even. Well, in 12-step groups the world over, for alcohol, drugs, you know, et cetera, gambling and sex addiction and everything, that's the way that it works. I walk into the room, I don't have a bag on my head, and you don't have a bag on your head either. It's not like we're saying, well, I'll be honest with you, because if you catch me, then I'll tell somebody that I saw you at an AA meeting or something. That's not the way it works, really, but the relationship is real, and that's why it works. And everybody who's there is there. Most people would rather die than walk into, let's say, a Sexaholics Anonymous meeting or an SLAA meeting or any of those 12-step recovery fellowship meetings. You'd rather die than walk in there, you know? So, you know, all the excuses, it's a church, it's this, it's that, they all fall by the wayside. The truth is, it's just like there are tremendous butterflies in the stomach before a person takes that step. Just like when a person comes onto Guard Your Eyes and starts to post or something, there are butterflies in the stomach because it feels like I'm coming out. And this is like, ooh, this is a huge step, and the hand's shaking, and it's like, what did I do? Well, maybe I should erase it. You know, many of us have had that experience. So that level of honesty and realness is so small in a place like Guard Your Eyes, yet it is there to some small degree. So it will help for a little while, and that's why a lot of guys admit that they did speak to a Rebbe. They did open up to a Rebbe, but it didn't really work. It worked for a few weeks. It worked for a few months, maybe, and then it stopped working because the honesty didn't remain. And that small step that they took was just not enough. It wasn't real enough. So that's really the answer, establishing whatever they did the first time that got them clean wasn't the fact that they told the Rebbe and the Rebbe gave them good advice. The Rebbe has nothing to say. And if he does, or if she does, you know, some woman, you know, a girl, you know, a woman or a girl who speaks to her mentor, you know, if she's a Rebbetzin or whatever, she also doesn't have much to say. They'll say lots of stuff because we all have to sound like we have something to say. But the real solution is the opening up and the honesty, you know. Sort of like the Rambam says that the ikar of tshuva is really the vidui. That's really the core of the mitzvah, is the vidui. And the Rambam paskins, it's vidui barabim by a mitzvah ben odin l'chavero. So you see that, you know, and then, you know, if people have a kasha about ben odin l'chavero, ben odin l'amach, then somebody can ask. I can discuss that in another call, what the difference is and why we openly admit these things in recovery groups. Somebody has some background noise. If you can be careful about that, I'd very much appreciate it. Thank you, Hama. So getting back to the point. So actually here we are in a place where there is safety, not in secrecy because we can't figure out who each other is, but rather because we can figure out who each other is. That's what the 12 steps is about. One addict helping another addict, not over the phone, not in secret, not with a bag on your head, but the AA way. You walk into a room and you say, "Hi, my name is, my name is Sam, you know, and I am an alcoholic." No one says, you know, can you imagine a guy comes in and goes, he walks into an AA meeting, you know, or some other fellowship meeting, you know, and he goes, you know, or even unguard your eyes. It sounds so silly. He goes, you know, I've lived my whole life looking at pornography and masturbating and doing these things, and it's terrible, and I know it's a sin, and it bothers me so much, and this and that, and now I'm lying to my wife about it, or to my husband about it, you know, whatever it is, Kaseder, and I feel like a different person. I'm like a fake, and it's driving me crazy, and I have a double life, and I can't stand it anymore, which, by the way, Shmuel, one of the callers, asked on this call before we started the recording thing, said, maybe I shouldn't use a name, I'm sorry, but no one can figure out, it was, you know, obviously, but I'll just say, somebody asked on the call, that's what I'll do from now on, you know, somebody asked on the call, you know, what's the rock bottom and stuff, you know? So, like, the guy feels like, oh, I've hit rock bottom, and, you know, well, I'll talk about that a little bit later, interesting, but the, you know, I hit the rock bottom, I can't stand it anymore, I'm living a double life, I feel like such a fool, like I spoke about a little bit yesterday on the short call that was from 9 to 9:30 before we established the proper time as 8 to 9. You know, I hit this, you know, point where I can't stand it anymore. I lost a job, you know, I've spoken to guys who got fired from jobs because of internet use, porn use and stuff, and they got fired from another job for the same reason a year later. They never really got the help that they needed. We panic when we get caught, and we hide. We'd rather die. We feel like burying ourselves, and I'll do anything, just hide this, you know? And it's like a person caught with drugs and wants to, like, swallow it, you know what I mean? Try swallowing, you know, a pound of marijuana, you know? No, don't try that, but I'm just saying, it's like, you know, but that's what a person's desperate to do, you know? Take their money, flush it down the toilet quick, you know? It's like, whatever, it's get rid of it. You know, it's going to be lost. It's terribly painful. But anything beats being caught, you know? So that I've come to that point, and I'm caught. I'm catching myself, and I'm bringing myself to you. And my wife is going to leave me, and I'm going to get fired from another job. I see that I've lost the battle. I'm ready to change. I'm ready to do anything. How many times do I get phone calls or emails, not phone calls, but emails from guys in Guard Your Eyes? Say, I'm ready to do anything. I say, anything? Yes, anything in the chat, anything. I say, okay, well, how about use your real name with me like I'm using my real name with you? And the guy goes, oh, well, I'm not comfortable about that. I'm not comfortable with that. I'm like, okay. You know, you're willing to take any advice. Well, this is my first piece of advice. You know, you're not willing to do anything. You're just willing to take advice. You know, how about getting real with me? Be real. You know, the realness is what's missing. And when a guy says, no, I can't afford to be real, it's not because of shame. It's not because of fear, really. It's because the core of it really is, I believe, as an addict, you know, I believe the core of that unwillingness to open up about the full truth is because I need to protect it. I cannot open up to you because that will jeopardize my freedom to be able to have full access to this drug whenever I feel like it, you know? And I cannot do that. If you find out exactly what I do, then I'll be embarrassed when I do it, and I'll feel funny when I'll be awkward. It'll kind of ruin the moment, and I just can't do it. Like, you know, if somebody's talking to his sponsor, for example, and this caller on the call today asked about willingness, and the sponsee, I'm not talking about a Guard Your Eyes sponsor and sponsee. That's, you know, sometimes it'll be good. It's kind of hit or miss. It's like people, you know, you never know. The guy, most people on Guard Your Eyes are not addicts, of course, but it, you know, they're just, because this is an alcohol where, why would anyone want to stop alcohol? What's the big deal? I drink a beer with dinner sometimes. Why would somebody be going crazy about alcohol? Obviously, it's ruining their life. But most of the people on Guard Your Eyes aren't here because it's ruining their life in any way, shape, or form. It's ruining Hashem's plans for them. It's Hashem's life that they're ruining. It's Hashem's ideas for them that it's ruining, not their ideas for themselves. They'd like to say that their ideas for their lives are Hashem's ideas, but, you know, obviously it's not true because, look, they're masturbating and it's a sin. With alcohol, it's not a sin to drink. So if you're drinking, you're doing something that's mutter and you're ruining your life with it. So so you want to stop. That's your, you recognize that as your problem. An alcoholic recognizes that as his problem. With sex behaviors, a lot, the preponderance of people on Guard Your Eyes are good people, which is why they're there. They're not addicts. They're just good. Addicts are good people too, but you know, just as much as anybody else is. But most people on Guard Your Eyes are just good people who want to stop doing something that Hashem says is bad. It's not bad for them in any other way except for the fact that Hashem says it's bad. That's not hitting bottom. That's not an addict. Hitting bottom is, and an addict is somebody who is trying to stop, wants to stop, really, because of themselves, yet does not. Okay? You know, they want to stop, but they don't. And they can't quite figure out why, you know? And when the Torah says, oh, it's the Yetzer Hara, well, that wouldn't apply to alcohol. So anytime it doesn't apply to alcohol, so then you got to think to yourself, why am I, you know, this might not be an addiction at all, you know, and rightly so. So when does it become an addiction? When do I start to take a guy or a gal seriously when he or she says, you know, I think I'm an addict, is when they describe that they're doing things that they obviously don't want to do. And as long as they're saying, because it's an avera and I want to be good, you know, that's very nice. But there's no, I mean, if they really cared that much about Hashem's will and being good, and that was the priority for them to this extent, then they probably would not be doing these averas in the first place. They'd probably be doing something much, much less and be calling about something very, very very docative, you know? But again, the person who's doing this stuff and it's messing up their practical life, that hits them in a way that I say, I can see that you're not able to manage your life. I can see that you're trying to manage your life and it's really unmanageable by you. You're doing things that are damaging yourself. And saying that they're damaging me because the Malach is going to bust my eyes out in the kever, like it says in the Sfarim HaKadoshim and this and that, and he's crying about it because he saw a video about some guy with an after-death experience, you know, that there were babies screaming, Tati, all the babies that he could have had that he masturbated and this and that. Boy, you know, like that's, to me, that's very nice emotionalism. If it mattered to you that much, you probably wouldn't be masturbating in the first place now. You'd probably just stay clean and period and that's it. And you don't have to talk to me, you know. The guy who, you know, so in other words, the reason that he's not stopping isn't because he doesn't want to stop. He wants to stop very, very much. It's bad what he's doing, and he desperately wants to stop, but he hasn't hit bottom. In other words, he doesn't need to stop. He doesn't really need to stop. And that's hitting bottom. That's where the willingness comes from, when a person needs to stop. And that's the story of Eov. You know, Hashem, I'm not saying Eov was an addict at all. This has nothing to do with addiction directly. I'm talking about the desperation and crossing the line between needing to stop versus I really should stop. It's just driving me crazy. I really should stop, and needing to stop, which is the bottom line. That's hitting bottom. That's demonstrated to me very nicely in the story of Eov, where Eov was an Ish Tzaddik, as it says in the you know the Ksuvim there in Sefer Eov, and he was and Hashem gave him an Nisayon. The Satan said to Hashem, let me give him a test. Do you think he's such a tzaddik? Go ahead. And Hashem said, okay. And the Satan had Rishus, killed all of Eov's children. He had many children. Killed all of Eov's children in tragic accidents. And he destroyed Eov's farms and property and stuff. And just wrecked the man's whole life, you know? His wife was still alive, which is great. I mean, you know, but his children were all gone. His farms, his businesses destroyed and everything. One after another, all in one day, all in one like hour, a couple hours or whatever it was. And he finds out about each thing. And after all his possessions and everything he's got is destroyed, including his children, Rachman Litzalan, are dead and everything's gone, he said, Hashem Nasan, the Hashem Lakach, Yehi Shem Hashem Mavarach. just like I didn't deserve it when I got it, and I didn't say, oh, finally I got a child. You know, finally, you know, he didn't say that. I said, Baruch Hashem, he said. So now when God took it away, all I can say is Baruch Hashem that he gave it to me for as long as I had it, and that's it. You know, that's what Eov said. When did Eov crack? When did he hit bottom? When did it cross the line for him? When the Satan said to the Rabbanu Shalom, no, 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 that's not enough. That's not enough. I need to hit him in his body. And Hashem said, go ahead, try. And the Satan gave Eov tzara'as, mam'eres. He gave him horrible tzara'as, where parts of his skin were falling off, and he had to sit like naked or whatever it is in like a mud pit in the ground or something, and just for comfort. And that's when Eov finally cracked. And Eov said, you know, Kilelis Yomo, he cursed the day that he was born. And his friends all came and said, oh, if you did an Avera, you must have done an Avera. That's why you deserve this. Don't curse the day that you were born. Don't say Hashem doesn't have control over what happened, because that's what Kilelis Yomo means. The Mefarshim say that when Eov cursed the day he was born, he was saying that I have bad mazel. Everybody's born with a certain mazel and things that they have to go through in their life. And this is what Hashem's, you know, this is what my mazel was for me before I was born, regardless of whether I'm a good guy or a bad guy. Just like we know, Chazal tell us, before someone's born, it's determined. Is he going to be smart or stupid, rich or poor, tall or short, you know, whatever, fat or skinny, you know, bald or, you know, full head of hair. You know what I'm saying? Hashem decides all these things. So Eob said, Hashem decided that I will go through. He figured it must be that I have this mazel. Hashem decided I'm going to go through my life. I'm going to be tremendously successful in business and have many good, healthy children who are decent folks and this and that. And then they're all going to die, God forbid, lo'aleinu. And I'm going to lose everything that I have. That's what Hashem decided when I was born. And he cursed that day that he was born. In other words, he blamed that day. He still loved the Rabbanu Shalom. He just blamed. He just said, you know, that's God's will. I hate the day that I was born. I wish that I had different mazel. That's how the Mefarshim that I'm aware of types. You know, I mainly learned it with Mitzvahs. But anyway, that's the basic taich of it. Maybe Radak, but maybe I'm remembering the Radak. I can't recall. It's been almost 30 years. But anyway, so anyhow, and then his friends came and said, no, 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 you must have done an Avera. And he said, no, I didn't. And they said, oh, and they came for like 30 chapters, they go after him, all, you know, his three friends or whatever they are, three, four friends, whatever it is, and they say to him different proofs about how you must have done an Avera and you don't realize it. And Eov says basically, no, I didn't do an Avera, and I do realize that I didn't do an Avera, and you're wrong, and blah, 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 blah. And then finally Hashem says, okay, enough already. And he talks to Eov and, you know, whatever, he consoles him and the safer ends. And then he gets everything back, not everything back, but he gets, you know, again, he's fabulously wealthy with many children and et cetera, the most beautiful kids in all the land and la, 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 la. Fine. The point of the story was that he cracked when he got tzara'as mam'eres. That was hitting bottom for Eov. That was hitting bottom. Until now, he lost his children. That wasn't enough. That didn't hit him in a way that he felt his life is unmanageable. I cannot live anymore. I cannot live. He didn't feel that then. I can't imagine that, but that's what it means. But when he got tzara'as in his body, that was crossing the line for him. That's when Eov cracked and said, oh, I can't live this way. This can't be from God. This can't be hashkacha pratis that, you know, it was good for me and this. This is just yomo. This is just mazel, and that's it. It has nothing to do with right or wrong, nothing to do with good or bad, nothing to do with, you know, my ma'asim at all. It's not hashgacha pratis. It's not love. It's not hate from Hashem. It's neither. It's just meaningless, you know?
Neither.
I can't stand it. That's hitting bottom. For the addict, it's not something outside himself that's terrible, like it's an avera, I'm going to go to hell, all my things are going to die, this is going to happen, that's going to happen, oh, I can't, I have to go to recovery. That's not a guy who's ready. That's a guy who's ready for guard your eyes, and that's fine. Get the physic that you need, because it's probably just the Yetzer Hara. You're not an addict. get the help that you need. The Torah, the Moshe Sfarim are full of Eitzes. Rabbanim and Tzaddikim are around who can help you get the help that you need. But if you're an addict, if you come to the point that it hits you like the Tzaraas hit Eov, that was over and above punishment. This isn't punishment. This is, I can't live anymore. Not that Hashem can't stand me anymore. I can't stand me anymore. I am the problem, not the Torah's rules, that if the rules would be different, they would be okay. No, if the rules were, if masturbation were a mitzvah, I couldn't do it. If looking at porn were a mitzvah, will you tell yourself such a thing? I couldn't do it anymore because I'm out of control. My life is insane. I'm living a double life because I'm a liar. I'm a fake. And I can't stand it anymore. I'm living two lives. When I got clean, my blood pressure went down 10 points in that first few months. 10 points my blood pressure went down. You know, I had warts on some places on my skin that went away in the first year, in my first year of sobriety. Because it was like the case of Eov. I had hit bottom. It wasn't just losing everything and my life a shambles. And this, it was, I am ill and I can't live this way anymore. As long as it's because it's usher and that's the only reason that I need to stop, then ultimately, you, me, we are blaming God for my not being able to keep masturbating and looking at porn as much as I want to. Ultimately, that's what the person's doing. And that person is not interested in recovery. They're interested in getting me out of this anyway. And if someone could show him that it's mutter, then he would be okay. You know? And this is why, as you, and I can speak to you, because whoever you are, especially if you're a guy, and a Talmid Chacham or a Ben Torah, you have probably, as I did, searched through the Rishonim and the Achronim and the Nosei Kelim on the Shulchan Aruch, particularly in the parts of the Shulchan Aruch where he matters more things regarding sex than in other places in the Shulchan Aruch where he asks more, which you know what I'm talking about. You've already looked through for Heterim and this and that. You know, and I think I've heard it all. I've heard it all from guys probably. You know, well, aren't they Pnuyos? Isn't it just an image? Isn't it this? Isn't it all these? It's like, why are they saying this? Well, they're not trying to matter it for themselves because here they are on guard your eyes. They're trying to stop. So why are they trying to matter it? No, it's that echo of that voice inside that says, just help me out of this problem in any way. And one door that's open is going to be matter the whole thing in my case. That's going to be one of the doors. As long as that door is open, as long as that's still there and the person really is only stopping because his wife is upset about it, or really is only stopping because his wife would be upset about it if she caught him, or really is only stopping because or her husband would find out about it and that's why she's trying to stop, same thing with a man or a woman, or as long as this person's stopping because Hashem is wants him to stop and stuff, and it's not because he cannot live this way, just like Eov with the Tzaraas. He can't continue. And that's why Eov cracked. This guy has not cracked yet. And he's not ready. He's doing it for someone else. And inside him is that excuse still alive. Its heart is still beating inside him. That's with this excuse of, if God wouldn't say it's a sin, then I would be okay. You know? And these are the guys who are shocked when they hear that in any neighborhood in any city that has very few Jews in it, SA meetings are full of goyim, of non-Jews. And they go, and these people, and these firmies who are calling me, good men, good women, they're shocked. They say, well, why would goyim be in like SLAA and SAA and SA and different kinds of 12-step groups? Why? Isn't it fine for them? What do they care? You know, they're animals anyway, you know? It's like, no. Addicts aren't people who want to stop because Hashem tells them not to and they have all this guilt about doing what Hashem doesn't want them to do. That's not why an addict is an addict, and that's not why an addict stops. addict stop because I can't do it anymore for myself. And even if it were a mitzvah, I could not do it. And you know that alcoholics, from alcoholics, don't drink arbakosis if there's nothing but wine. They don't drink the arbakosis. And every rav in the universe will matcha that for them and say 100%. Not only is it mutter for you not to drink the arbakosis, but it's yehoreg val yavor for you to drink the arbakosis. Yehoreg val yavor. Better to be mechalal Shabbos than to drink a sip of beer if you're really an alcoholic. Even if you're clean for 25 years, it's yehoreg val yavor. Not because, oh, you might go back. No, it's because you're an alcoholic and you can't do that. Period. You know? It all comes from the same source. As long as it's rule from God or rule from your spouse or whatever that's making it the problem behavior, and that's why you want to stop, you are not ready to stop yet. You're not. You're ready to get chizuk and try to stop, and good luck, you may stop, but you're not ready to stop. If you stop, it'll be by accident. You know? It'll be because of, you know, good wisdom and things, which is nice. But that's not what recovery is, that's not what addiction is, and that's not the way. It's not going to work. That's not bottom. So I hope I addressed a couple of things, what one person asked and a little bit about what another person said so far. I didn't say it's Tefila yet. I just want to begin part two of the call with a Tefila. There's a little background noise. Somebody here on the line has like voices in the background, like a hallway maybe of kids or something, it sounds like. I'm trying to help you so that you know who you are and can help us. Oh, beautiful, you muted your phone. And by the way, I just want to make an announcement for anybody who's listening to know, yesterday on the first call, which was at the wrong time, it was yesterday we had a call at the wrong time. The calls are from, this call, God willing, is Monday through Thursday, from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. New York City time. That is Hashem. So yesterday somebody put their phone on hold. And if you put your telephone on hold, what happens is on some lines, particularly for, you know, if you're calling from your work or something and listening, then there's like a beeping that comes on the line for the listener so that they know that you didn't hang up on them, you're still on hold. And then that beeping comes on our call, and it's very distracting. So yesterday I had to do a master mute, better than a master something else, but I had to do a master mute, and I don't like doing the master mute, because what happens is if people want to say things, they don't know sometimes how to unmute themselves and then speak on the call and ask questions, you know what I'm saying? So I prefer not to do that if I didn't have to. So if you do have to put your phone on hold, maybe just put it on mute instead of hold, okay? Or hang up and call back later, because if you're calling from a business, that hold button causes a sudus. Anyway, so before we get to part two of the call, until 9 o'clock when we stop, Elohai, Netzor L'Shani Miros, V'Sai Midabir Memo. I just want to ask the Rabbanu Shalom that every time we're on this call together, all of us, where Hashem helps us not say anything silly, and that people will not understand properly and get wrong ideas from. Just like there's no sefer without mistakes, there's no speech without mistakes, and there's no speaking without mistakes too. So I apologize for things, you know, that I say that are not understandable or mistaken beforehand, and I, you know, and also that anybody is choshem kochol akamim choshem alai ra meira aferas tasam kalkiel mahasham tam. That I pray to the Rabbanu Shalom that anybody who's listening this call, God forbid, for wrong purposes, which is possible, that no harm comes of it to me or to anybody else. Thank you. And anybody have any questions before for the last 15 minutes?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Can I make a question?
I just asked you if you have a question. Go ahead. Please.
You said that someone that didn't hit bottom yet, that's not the real. He's not ready to the real recovery. So someone who isn't a real addict, I assume that the 12 steps won't work for him. So what is he supposed to do to really want to stop and really be ready to stop?
I hear very much. That's sort of what the man on the beginning of the call asked. Let me just ask you a question, Faber, before I go on. Were you can hear a recording if you weren't, that's fine. Or if you want to, and it's okay with me either way, but when did you come on this call? 10 minutes ago, a half an hour ago, or from the beginning?
I was in the beginning.
Okay, fine. Good. Okay, good. So I know some of the things I'm gonna say are gonna be better understood. Okay, fine. Good. So what's a person supposed to do? So many of us are in a situation. Many people are in such a situation because looking at pornography is prasnisht. It's prasnisht for a yid. Even for not a yid, it's prasnisht. It's prasnisht. It's, especially if somebody's a married woman, for her to be looking at pornography is not right to do to her husband, and for a man, for him to look at pornography, it's not right for him to do to his wife. It's pushing, not nice. Now, if she knows about it and she doesn't care, and she mamish knows, not just that she knows, yeah, I have a pornography problem, but if the spouse knows that you're looking at it, mamish when you're looking at it and what you saw and da da da, and the spouse doesn't care, so then okay, maybe it's not so bad that you're doing something to them. Maybe it's not a real benam, it doesn't come to that benam lechavero, evil level and all that stuff. Perhaps not. I'm not someone to judge about the aspect of benam lechavero when it's ona and when it's not ona. You know what I'm saying? When it's hurting somebody's feelings and when it's not. But typical marriage experience, every spouse knows that it's adultery, in some level, that it's horrible. It's horrible, adultery kind of behavior. You're looking at some other couple being sexual and this, if my wife, if I caught my wife having a chat habit with some other guy, or some other woman, porn and schmutz and talking dirty and this and that, for weeks and weeks, the same person or the same pictures or the same scenes with the same guy, I would want to shoot myself in the head. It would drive me crazy. If my wife were doing this stuff, the jealousy in me that I feel towards these other people that she prefers to look at would drive me crazy, and I'm talking real world. I'm not talking, well, but technically she might just be, it's a taiva and it has nothing to do with, why are you jealous? Okay, I'm not interested in sweet, sappy, psychological mumbo-jumbo. I'm just saying this is just real-world sex. When guys find out that their wife has a phone sex affair with another guy or another girl, the guy doesn't react. No matter how yeshivish or how psychologically trained or how intellectualizing this guy is going to be, he does not react by saying, I see you have a difficulty. I really was just in it. Is there anything I can do to help you, sweetheart? That's not how the guy reacts. The guy goes absolutely freaking insane. And I don't care if he's a Rosh Hashiva. I don't care if he's a Mechubad. I don't care if he's a Shegetz. I don't care. You go insane. Even a Goy does the same thing. Same thing. He might laugh when he finds out and be nice for the first time, just like many, many Beis Yaakov girls when their husband admits to them after 15 years that I have a porn problem, I feel terrible, and I looked at porn and porn and porn and porn, and I do phone sex, and I do this, and I do that, and then this thing, and that thing, and the other thing, and it's terrible, and she goes, oh, sweetheart, I understand, and the guy calls me, and he says, I got caught by my wife yesterday, and I told her everything, or I just told her everything, and you know, and she's so understanding. It's wonderful. I say always, I say to this guy, wait a week, you know, or wait 2 days. Let's see how wonderful she's going to feel in 2 days. Because the mourning period, right now she's like, you know, an oneg. You know, she doesn't feel anything. It's, you know, she can be all nice. But when it starts to sink in that you mean, when we were at, Avraham Yehoshua's chasana, you know, my brother, and we took all those great family photos, that was when you were at, when we were in North Carolina and you discovered a whorehouse or something, that's when you went there and look at your face in the pictures. You're smiling and you were joking with me an hour before you went or an hour after you came back from this acting out thing, or you were looking at porn on someone's phone in the bathroom for a half an hour in the costume, and that's why you admitted to me that you disappeared. That was right before the photography session, and look at you in the photographs. You're smiling and you're laughing, and you were so personable. I realized that you're a shyster. You're a fake. Oh, my God. I'm married to a guy who's a fake. And it, like, strikes her. It hits her in her heart, and it tears her to pieces. Not that you looked at naked pictures and it's usher and it's, and yes, yeah, she has jealousy of other women's bodies that you look, that's all a zeite gezach. It's you're a fake. It's that it's usher, that you're a shagitz, it's disgust, all that stuff. No matter how chassidish and how this and how that and how yeshivish or how whatever she happens to be, it's, that's all talk. The thing that kills her is that you're a fake and you played her for a fool. That's when that hits. There's going to be hell to pay, and there should be, but there's going to be hell to pay. And my point is that that's what we do when we're doing this. So I'll spend other lechaveiro. It's a good thing to stop. But I'm not talking about recovery now at all, because I'm not talking about addiction at all. I'm not referring to addiction, even. I'm just saying from a simple moral perspective, addiction doesn't respond to moral, you know, warnings and moral discussions and things. You know, when most guys who I know are acting out, if you look at their history and they actually get honest with themselves about their history, and self-honesty comes as a result of being honest to others, not the other way around. The only way that works is nasa, the nishma. It only works. Honesty to others brings me to self-honesty. That's the only way it works. So anyway, and it's totally not intuitive, but that's the truth. So this guy who's open, he finally opens and everything up, you know, I totally lost my train of thought there. I'm so sorry. I should hear a recording. I was in the middle of saying a specific point, and I can't remember what it was because I got off track because of the honesty to others is what brings a person to honesty with themselves. But, oh, I hear so many guys open up and be honest. I can't remember now. I'm so sorry. I can't remember what I was saying right before that. At least I can admit it without shame. A little bit of my ego is going, thank God, because of this program. While I'm on a tangent, let me just throw in. Sometimes the guy who's honest with his wife is really doing a terrible avla. There are many times where that can be the case, but... The wife's not going to save him, that's for sure. What's she supposed to give him enough sex to satisfy him? It's not going to happen. He's just going to turn her into a piece of garbage. but a lot of times when a guy opens up to his wife, actually he's only doing an avla, not doing anything good. When the only person that he opens up to is his wife. When the only person that a guy who might be an addict opens up to, excuse me, is his wife, usually, talk to a psychologist? No, I can't do that. I can't be honest. It's Chol Hashem, or it's this, or it's that. You know, that he's not doing. He's too ashamed, you know, go to a meeting. You know, he's doing terrible things, and he's probably an addict. Well, he can't do anything. He can only admit it to his wife. Why his wife and no one else? Not a psychologist, not a rav, not a meeting of other safe addicts. No. Only his wife. Why? Because he knows that his wife would rather die than her own parents finding out that she married such a loser. So he knows that his secret is safe with her. He knows that if the Olam found out what he was doing, she would want to die more than he wants to die. Because the shame a woman feels, just open up Rabbi Arush's Sefer, you know, the shame that a woman feels when her honor is completely ripped from her and she's put into public disgrace is so horrifying. It's even worse than a man, he believes. Whether he's right or wrong, I don't know. But he knows that the secret is safe with his wife. That's why he's telling her, because he's a weenie. That's why. But he knows he's got to tell someone because he can't carry this burden in secret anymore. You know? He can't carry the burden in secret anymore. So his wife carries it with him. Now he's not alone. Great. Great job. Great job, you know? All you did was, you know, you know, that's not going to save him. Now, if telling his wife is a first step toward him getting real help and telling somebody who the honesty would create a relationship of recovery, well, you know, like a good therapist or you know, a 12-step fellowship, so if that's the beginning of the journey that he's got, so then okay, I'll say maybe it's worth it. Except it's a cold, cruel thing to do. The first person to be honest with is someone else. By the way, being honest with a psychologist isn't even as good as, in terms of creating realness as being honest to another recovering person, because you know whatever for a different reason. But the basic thing is that everybody knows that a psychologist looks at you as a piece of meat, looks at your brain and your behavior as a piece of meat in an objective way, and a real person who you become friends with, who knows you, who sees you, who this and that. That's much more real, and that's much more meaningful and helpful. Now, a therapist will have lots of great advice, particularly for non-addicts, but also addicts benefit a lot from therapy. But many people won't get better in 12 steps until they have therapy. That happens a lot. But still, a therapist, you know, how do women go to a gynecologist? You know, how do from women go to a male gynecologist? How is it possible? How is that possible? It's so embarrassing. It's this, it's that. Think of what's going on. Well, don't think of what's going on. But, you know, it's like, how is it possible? Well, the answer is because she's just a piece of meat. And that's good. That makes the relationship work. And that's why that's the relationship that a lot of people have with a therapist. It doesn't affect them because it's not personal. If it got personal, then they wouldn't. If a psychologist was a firm guy that lived in their neighborhood, forget it. They'd never be open and honest with him. I've had calls from guys who say, you know, my psychologist asked me if I look at gay porn and I couldn't be open and honest with him because he lives in my neighborhood, or maybe the time she, you know, he was ashamed for the therapist. Well, then you're wasting your money, I tell him. You can't be honest with your therapist. You don't trust him, then why are you going to him or her? You know, why? It doesn't make any sense. So anyway, we're winding up, but I apologize. There was a point in there somewhere where I got lost on a track, and I apologize for that. So what's a person to do if he's not an addict? You know, there's a lot of things to do. There's a lot of, I mean, I can't share because I'm not in that situation, but I can only share with you what I have, and I don't have that. You know, I tried everything. Oh, maybe this is the tangent that I was getting on. The firmer I got and the firmer guys get in recovery and stuff, the worse their behavior gets very often. Those guys are probably addicts, you know? The guys who start to go to the mikveh now every day, morning and night, instead of just after they had Zera Levatoa, and they're masturbating even worse, or they go from one level of acting out to a worse level of acting out, you know, now they start putting on a Rabbeinu Tanfilin, and now they have Kavana in the Shemos, that it's a Yud and a Hey, and a Vav and a Hey, and the Aleph and the Dalet, Nun and Yud, and they do a Shiluv of the Oisius every time they say a Bracha, and you see, when you look at the history, when they admit the comprehensive actual history in detail, you see that during that same timeline that they were getting more from, so to speak, they were acting out even worse, or right after, as a result of them getting extra thrummer, they acted out even worse. You see that, and that's a very common pattern, you know, that the more religious we get, you know, the sicker we get. That's very common in addicts, I'm saying. Not in guard your eyes, guys, but in addicts, you know, specifically. When that happens, that's a red flag. That means, number one, the path you're on to try to quit is not just wrong, but it's completely wrong. It's the opposite. You know, you shouldn't be getting, quote unquote, more fastidious and more, compulsive about different things to try to, you know, you're becoming a shuckle like you're ever been the butt, you know? You're just getting worse. You're trying to do mitzvahs to make up for your averas, and that's all it is. So your averas are going to get bigger, and it's going to feed your mitzvahs. This is what I posted many years ago called the nuclear reset button. You know, it's a post on Guard Your Eyes. And the nuclear reset button is really for another time, but it basically proposes that
it's
a lot
a
of... I'm sorry? I didn't hear you, Father. Oh, maybe he wasn't talking to me. Okay. If anybody has anything they want to say, please go ahead and say it. And it is, we are over time, I'm sorry. But the nuclear reset button is... It basically states that it's just an idea that basically states that in many cases, not everyone's cases, but in many cases, the thrummer people get, the worse their acting out gets, because their acting out is their frumkeit is not frumkeit. It's not really frumkeit. It's krumkeit. But they're over acting. You know, the whole thing and using, trying to pretend that they can use, you know, more of the spiritual or religious sounding stuff to try to fight this, even though it's not working, actually causes them to act out more and more and more, in those cases. So, that's not always the case. There are many people who, let's say they decide, I'm going to the Chazon Ish says, if a person wants more Kedusha in his life, then he should try doing something extra. Like, for example, the example he brings, I think, is washing a Tulas Yadayim by your bed in the morning instead of walking to the bathroom, you know? Now, that doesn't mean that I'm suddenly a tzaddik, but it means that I'm doing something extra, trying to start my day off like Bikurim, I'm starting off my day with holiness right at the very beginning, and it sets a good tone in your day. Taking on things like that might help you, you know? But if a person sees that doing this kind of stuff is not helping him, probably it's because he's doing what I described before. He's using his frum activities to prove to himself that he's really okay, or he's connecting to God in a more exciting way by going to an extreme, and it's driven by his sinning. And therefore, when he stops sinning, he'll stop feeling so close to God. And when he stops sinning, when he stops looking at porn, masturbating, struggling, etc., a period of time will pass where he'll be clean, and he will slowly stop feeling any real exciting connection to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and he will end up acting out in order to feel that the Mokum Shabali Tshuva Om, the main Siddiqim Gemur Micholim Lamod, feeling again, which is so precious and so beautiful, that feeling. And he can't get it any other way. And therefore, his acting out and his frumkeit are working in tandem. They're symbionts, you know. And there is no frum way out of that problem that he's in. It's called, I call it the nuclear reset button, for the reason that I described in the post. They call it in Congress the nuclear option, but it's a crazy solution, but it's a solution, you know. This guy has to act out in order to feel closer to God, and he doesn't realize it. None of us, Chas v'Shalom, we don't realize this intentionally, act out in order to be close to God. That's not what we're doing, you know, but intentionally. But that's the psychology of it, and that's what happens. Anyway, I'm over time. Anybody want to end with a question for next time? sorry for getting on a little late. Okay, so just email WeQuitHiding2 if you want to for questions. I want to kind of do different topics here with God's help, and thanks so much for people sharing today and for people participating a lot more than yesterday. God willing, the call is going to be 8 to 9 a.m. Monday through Thursday. All the best.
Thank you.
A good day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm sorry?
Thank you.
Oh,
thank you. Thank you very much. It wouldn't be possible without people coming on the call. Be well. Bye-bye.